Let me go back to my parents, your grandfather and grandmother. My father was about 5'9", 10, a little on the light side, but not thin, but sturdy. I would say good looking. He had very fair, blonde hair, always cut short, a kind of crew cut, straight features, and a good, healthy, outdoor complexion. Our name for him was Da, just D-A, Da. I didn't know that I ever called him anything else up to the time I last saw him in 1930. Only to his short, blonde hair, he was known to his friends and fellow workers as Whitey. To me, although he had had a meager education, he had a bright mind, well-read, and I would say very even-tempered. He was intensely patriotic, especially to Scotland, and a confirmed Tory or conservative in thoughts for Britain. In after years, my brother Archie and I had many discussions with him about national and international news. He did like so-called socialism and believed that everyone should be able to take care of themselves except the old, sick and helpless. This was long before Britain had its present policy of health care. Which incidentally, I believe is okay and works pretty well now in an age after two world wars. We enjoyed these little discussions, no shouting, as he believed we were entitled to our views, and he was, and I must agree, often his logic and clear thinking was hard to beat. I grew up to like his honesty and thinking. He'd had a tragic childhood when he was young, which I know he never forgot. I never found out where he was born or any details, except that at an early age he and his two younger brothers, John, Uncle John of North Tarrytown, and the still younger brother Robert, my namesake, were deserted by his father, my grandfather, with their mother to fend for themselves. I don't know how long his mother lived, but the three boys were put in a public home for deserted children, and until my father was 13, were half-starved and mistreated in this home, for the youngest boy, Robert, died through physical mistreatment and malnutrition, and the other two boys, Archie and John, were released to fend for themselves the best they could. This period in my father's life was all a blank to me, as he never spoke about it, and at rare times when one of us would complain about some little trivial thing, he would just say, "You're lucky," and maybe tell us a few words of his life in the home, and that would be that. While in the home, the two eldest boys, Archie and John, were put to work in the tailoring department of the home, where they made clothes for the convicts and army uniforms for the government, and they both became pretty proficient as tailors. After their release from the home, my Uncle John was apprenticed to a regular man's tailor in Glasgow, and became very well skilled at it, and made it a life career. Oh, how I often wish these 20 years or so that I had learned more about my father from Uncle John, but for some reason or other the subject was never brought up between us, so from now on my father's background is a blank to me, and only becomes real to me after our family life in Kerswick, Glasgow, as I grew up. All I know is he did not like his future as a tailor, and wanted to work in the open air. So Archie and John went their separate ways for some years, although keeping in touch. My father took up services with a farmer in Ayrshire, south of Glasgow, and as I think changed to other farmers as he grew more proficient and stronger. All I know is that his employer is that one of his employers was a Mr. Brown on a real nice farm called Berry Hill, near Kilmarnock, which holds many happy memories for all the buyers of Glasgow. Mr. and Mrs. Brown took my father in to work for them and treated him like one of their own sons, three of them, and my father grew up and worked with these three boys like brothers. My father must have loved these people, as he often spoke about his happy days at Berry Hill Farm, although like all farm work, it was from dawn to dusk and hard work. He used to talk to us about the Browns at Berry Hill Farm, of how he enjoyed his years with the family, which endowed him with a great love for animals of the farm, especially the horses, of which he was an expert in caring for and in their sickness and good health. And through his talk of them, he instilled in all our family a love and fondness for horses. Even the girls, any of us, had no fear of them, and would go up to wagon horses, etc., in the streets and feed them by hand with potatoes or apples or pieces of our lunch sandwiches. For years, while we were growing up in Kerr Street, Glasgow, my father would rent a horse and carriage, a break wagon, as we called it, with four seats along each side of it, no top, and two seats up front. About four or five Sundays in the summer, he would drive to several spots in the country he knew very well. We would picnic along the way, and on to a bigger place where he could unharness a horse and put it in a stable, and which incidentally either John or I was riding on the horse's back into the stable, sometimes both of us on it. Well, he'd put the horse into the stable, feed and water it. Then we'd all sit down in a shady spot and enjoy our lunch in the great outdoors, and we could roam around at our leisure, while my mother and father would have a little nap on the horse blankets in the grass. A simple little trip to the countryside, but oh how we enjoyed it. About two of these outings, my father would drive to Berry Hill Farm, his only real home, I guess, since his father deserted them. And it was a great day for the Browns and the Bars. They were like grandparents we never knew, and they were all so happy to see us. My father never made this trip unless the Browns wrote and asked him to come down. He knew it was a big day of work for them and did not want to impose on them unless they expected us. What a feed that was for all of us in the farmhouse. A great big meal, typical of a farm, dishes and plates loaded with food on a big kitchen table. And after we all got through eating, Mrs. Brown would chase us all out, all the kids that is, and tell Mr. Brown or the sons to take us all over the farm to see the new calves or young pigs and maybe a horse or cow they had recently bought. I can't explain it all, but leave it to your imagination of a great day, to what lucky kids we were to be able to enjoy such days. On the way home, we were half asleep until we hit the cobble streets and traffic of Glasgow again, and usually about dusk, 8:30 or 9 p.m, we'd arrive back at 35 Kerr Street with all our friends crowding around us. By the time we'd got all our gear up to the house, the first call was wash up and get to bed, which we gladly did, as we were all really tired to get to sleep. After such a day in the country, the round trip used to last about 12 as we left early in the morning. I mean, I'm ashamed to admit here, but it's only now that the thought came to me that Father had to drive back to the horse's stable, unharness it, put the harness away, wash and feed the horse, put it in his stall, then have to walk all the way home by himself about 1.5 miles. And by the time he got home, we were all fast asleep, with not a care or worry in the world. Lucky kids, we were in these days. Anytime we were going these drives, as we called them, My father would be up and out by 6 a.m. and go off to the stable to get the horse and carriage. John and I would get up after he left, dress and had our breakfast and hurry down and set off down on a bright Sunday morning. And the streets almost deserted, and meet my father with a wagon on the way home. We'd sit up beside him, put the big horse blankets over our knees like professionals, and he would give each of us a range to drive the horse for a few minutes each, and we felt like the luckiest kids in the world. On the way we stopped and picked up a 2-gallon can of fresh milk to take with us for the day, and we got home, everybody was ready, my mother having packed the food for the day, a big yellow melon, oranges and apples, candies and bottles of soda, plus all kinds of sandwiches and cake in a special hamper that was kept for that day. As long as I can remember, we spent the month of August at the noon on the River Clyde, a beautiful little seaside summer resort, a place some of you have visited in later years. Our large steam hamper was gotten out of storage about a week before we left, and my mother gradually would pack it with all our clothes, including Sunday clothes, which we had to wear on Sunday. No playing games or running around on that day, and we would be told to go out, take a nice quiet walk into the village and look in the store windows or watch the weekend passengers coming off the Sunday steamers at the pier. Only 2 steamers ran on Sundays, and many people from Glasgow and its area would crowd onto them at the Brimelow Pier, Glasgow, and enjoy the sail down the Clyde, which took about 1.5 hours one way. At 7 p.m. and 8 p.m., they would all toot back to the pier, get on the boats for Glasgow after having spent a good day away from work once a week. At that time, most people worked at least half a day on Saturday. Needless to say, we all always enjoyed and looked forward to August every year, even up to the time before I joined the Army in 1917, although I was in France by the time August 1907 came around. But all others in the family, younger than me, were there, although most things were a little quieter and different at that time. Most men away in the Army, and the old ones working overtime in the shipyards and munitions plants, 7 days a week mostly. What I've told you about my early life, you will see that we were a lucky family compared to some of our friends. During the year, my father worked 6 days a week, late shift, from 10 a.m. till 10 p.m., and every other week, the early shift, 6 a.m. till 6 p.m. But he also had to work 2 Sundays during the month, 8 a.m. till 6 p.m. So there were times we didn't see too much of him. On his late shift, we'd all be in bed asleep when he got home and still be asleep when we left for school. On the Sundays that he worked, he arrived, he carried his lunch with him, sandwiches and a special enamel tea container with a cup on top. And on his way home from work on Sundays, he always stopped off at an ice cream store and filled his tea container with ice cream, and we'd all be waiting for him coming home and getting a dish of ice cream. Most every Saturday evening, he'd come home with oranges and apples, which we were given us often after we got out of Sunday school on 11 a.m. Sunday. Just another example of his thoughts for us. We used to take it for granted until some friends told us that they did not get so many things as we did. Now I realize how lucky we really were. My father was employed by a lad's livery company who rented out horses and carriages to wealthy people and several big businessmen in Glasgow on a regular contract annual basis. And these horse and carriages were beautiful, built and looked exactly like privately owned cars. And my father and the other drivers wore regular livery, dark jackets and two rows of brass buttons, dark pants and knee-length black jack boots with a broad band, about 3 inches of light brown leather to top them off. A tall hat, and they looked just like the outfits of Robert.